I think I've done the last 3 to 4 introductions incorrectly.
Yeah, I like that. Every single time, it's like, how do we start? So I'm going to start this time.
Okay, do it.
I'm Jack Mottman.
I'm Chris Retz.
And this is Three Blind Drinks. We're going to have 3 whiskeys blind, and we're going to see if we can figure out something, maybe, or probably not. It's more likely that we have no idea what we're doing. Today, we are joined by the infamous, the lovely Billy Herbert, Herbert.
Hello.
So, you want to do whiskey number one?
I do. Should we say that it's maybe obvious that Billy is the one who has been calling us for the last 8 episodes?
Yeah.
So I couldn't be more pleased to have you actually here in this space.
I have to say, I'm the first guest that's already been on the show multiple times, and I'm not a repeat guest.
That's
so
true.
I don't know that many people can ever say that really on any podcast. So
that's a good point. This is my first time, and I've been on every episode.
Yes. I feel very original.
All right, let's do whiskey number one.
Let's do it.
They do look really similar. I'll tell you in advance, I am wary of you having picked the same whiskey 3 times.
as you said, great. They look similar. I was like, oh, that would have been amazing.
Oh, that's such a great idea. All right, so the whiskey number one has been poured. I suppose we should say also that these are whiskeys that Billy did not select.
Correct.
This week, for obvious reasons.
We had another selector. And I have an idea of what some of these are because of the process I had to go through, but I do not know exactly which is which and how it all goes together.
Just because I'm curious, I'm not sure if anyone listening is curious, but what was the process?
So I went to Catalina a couple of weeks ago with Billy, and while I was there, I met his friend Matt Cloud, who I pulled aside early on and said, hey, I'm going to need your help later. So Matt picked these.
Yes, and which is why I had a feeling of that. I think I knew that.
Yeah.
And so when you said the process, I was more or less a little concerned because Matt is a brilliant guy, but process becomes a variable thing when he's involved.
It's true. It wasn't too bad.
That's good.
So what are you smelling, guys?
I'm smelling like alcohol forward, like right away.
Mm-hmm.
Higher proof. Bourbon-y?
It smells like whiskey to me,
yeah.
Which I mean, I know is like a very generic thing to say, but that's kind of what it smells like.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you smell, you're like, oh man, this is really unique. This smells to me like pretty straight down the middle of the road, like whiskey.
Yeah. It's like got that oakiness. I couldn't tell you what continent yet. It doesn't feel like it's America or Scotland. I can't tell.
Yeah, I agree. Like, this is, I've actually said that exact thing on previous episodes. Like, if you handed me this and I couldn't see it, you just told me to smell it, I would be like, oh, that's whiskey.
Yeah.
You know, it has that definitely quintessential whiskey smell.
Like a little bit of sweetness to it, mm-hmm. maybe?
Yeah.
Which I always appreciate.
Yes.
Which is why you're saying maybe bourbon, Jack,
yeah.
correct?
See what it tastes like. No, I don't know what it is.
Well, that is hot.
It is hot.
Now, Grant, I always think things are hot.
You always
when I have
it.
My first sip.
Yeah,
agreed. I'm always like, damn. This is unbearably hot, but that definitely has some heat.
Yeah.
And it definitely has some, like harshness at the end.
Some what?
Some harshness.
Yeah. It's like, not smooth.
No.
It's almost barrel bitter a little bit. Like it's kind of got that, like it turns a corner at the end.
Yeah. It's definitely just like smacking me in the mouth. It's one of those where I can also feel it in my chest, which even really hot whiskeys that I'm like, whew.
Yeah.
Smacking my mouth a little bit. Sometimes they don't reach down into like my soul the way I feel like this one is.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that feeling the first time that you tried like hard liquor.
Yes.
And you were like, oh wow, this burns all the way down.
Yes. Yes. Do you remember the first time you tried hard liquor?
I don't, but I have a series of memories that would constitute the first time. So
okay.
I didn't start drinking until I was 20. But I was in England, so it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to the United States on my birthday. So I avoided ever having or ever getting to have a legal drink. But almost certainly my first hard alcohol would have been at our college bar, this bar called McNally's, with my rugby teammates, and it almost certainly would have been Jameson. And it would have undoubtedly been in shot form.
Yeah.
Just without question.
Another Jameson.
Yeah, we hear that. More often than not. I think it's safe to say at this point.
I would say at least over half of the people on the show.
Which Jameson. Good on Jameson.
Man. Yeah,
I mean that's fantastic that they are consistently introducing people to the world of whiskey, which is really cool.
Yeah, you know the funny thing is I have not had Jameson in years now. I
mean, oh, really?
Probably since I was a senior in college.
Do you have like an association with it? Like, is it a negative association or is it just?
It is that bar.
Oh, okay.
Like, it just is that bar. And that bar is my college experience. Mm. But I don't think that I could pick out Jameson.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Like, I was thinking about it, like, of course, they kind of had cornered on first time drinkers because you have Irish bars and you have this, but I don't even know that it's a quintessential Irish whiskey. Like, I couldn't tell you.
No, I think they've definitely marketed themselves well. I think they make me think they are. I don't know if they actually are because they're pretty huge. Like, yeah, like they make a ton.
Like, are they an Irish whiskey in the same way that like Blue Moon is a Belgian beer?
Right.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right.
I mean, it definitely seems so. Right. Like they're kind of.
But they have some nice bottles, though. I mean,
they really do.
For my buddy's wedding, we picked him up like a $300 bottle of Jameson. That would have been the most recent time I've had Jameson, and that was unbelievable. I mean, it was just phenomenal, but
yeah.
I don't even know if that counts as the same, thing at that point.
So I'm still trying to figure out something that I can say about this that's like super distinctive.
It had for me, it had this like, the beginning was sort of like the quintessential whiskey. I don't know what happened in the middle, but the end had this weird, like almost fizzy hotness.
Harsh.
Yeah.
It's just harsh.
Yeah.
Given that to me, it smells like whiskey, it tastes like nothing in particular and finishes harsh.
Mm-hmm.
My inclination is to say that it's something very straight down the middle. One of the like traditional kind of, $20 bottle kind of things, which I'm going to feel really bad about if it's something that somebody poured their heart and soul into.
Right.
But it,
it's a punch in the face. It's a smack in the mouth for the first sip. When I go back, so I've talked a lot about how when the glass is empty, all I can smell is the barrel.
Yeah.
But my glass isn't empty, and that's pretty much all I can smell. Is the barrel.
Yeah.
It is hot. The only thing that makes me think it's not one of these straight down the middle ones. It is hot. Like
And if you're doing straight down the middle, you don't keep it at high proof.
Yeah. And that really is hot. I don't know. If you've ever tried it, but Jack, we've done tasting at the Lost Distillery, and they have this Navy Proof rum.
Oh, yeah.
That is just like fire molasses is the only way that I can describe it. It is. It's really something to try, even setting aside all the other wild things about that brewery or distillery. But this has that kind of heat. If I let that linger for a while, it really does have a lot of heat. So, I mean, it might be something that's really good that is just at 120 proof.
Yeah,
that
you want to add a little water?
Yeah.
What you think?
It's kind of remarkable, actually, the heat. Like, it's been probably at least a full minute, if not 2 full minutes, since I last took a sip. And I can still just kind of feeling it warm my chest and things. It's a little crazy.
So I added water. Added far too much. So
no, I don't know if we've talked about this yet on the podcast, gents. And I'm genuinely curious. I get the general gist of why you would add water to whiskey, but for you all, what is adding water to whiskey?
So it proofs it down. So if it's at 55 proof, the more water you add, the more you're going to bring down the proof.
Sure. So you can kind of get past that alcohol forwardness and see what's going on behind it, maybe.
Yeah.
And
so if you talk to somebody at a distillery who chooses to bottle, their booze at 120 proof, they would probably tell you that the ideal drinking proof is not what they bottled it at, but they would recognize that people have a range of tastes and that there is a range of uses. If you want to put it in a cocktail, for example, if you take something that's 88 proof and you put it in a cocktail, it will be way too watered down.
It'll disappear.
Yeah.
And so they'll put it at high proof, knowing that you then have the ability. It's sort of like being able to add salt to your French fries.
Yeah.
You have the ability to make it as you would like to taste it.
Sure.
Because you can never put more alcohol back in.
Exactly.
What'd you think? Yeah, I'll say it did exactly as you described. Like, it's still pretty hot. Yeah. It's still pretty hot, but I feel like I am kind of able to get past that a little bit and taste a little bit of what's going on.
I think that's an Irish whiskey.
Yeah, it feels Irish.
Yep.
Especially after water. Just curious.
It has the flavor profile of Irish whiskeys. How is that for an unhelpful answer? No, there
That's
is
a terrible answer.
I don't know that I've ever tried to put words to what Irish whiskey tastes like to me, but I love Green Spot and Yellow Spot. Redbreast is really fantastic. I'm a big fan of things in that line. And this, like, it's not like I say those taste like that and this tastes like this. To me, it's when I drink it, I think of those things.
Mm.
It's sort of the, they call it like diffuse knowledge in your brain.
Yeah.
Like intuition being when you know something for very specific reasons, but you can't articulate them. And so you just describe it as intuition.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the process that's going on at the moment for
me.
I
think the best whiskey tasters, like the ones that can describe it the best, are able to connect those dots. They can say, oh, this reminds me of fresh cut grass. And I'm not saying that this whiskey does, but like they're able to take a specific thing and say, oh, that reminds me of that and that. And they can connect all these dots,
mm-hmm.
which hopefully, I mean, our goal would be that good to that we could be that good.
Yeah.
But there are these people, I mean, you'll hear this from sommeliers and people that love wine. They will talk about, I remember the time I tried this. Yeah. And I remember what it tastes like. And to me, I very cynically always think, bullshit.
Right.
I just taste to me is entirely referential. It there is no pure quality of taste to me. It's what does it taste like in the context of where I am relative to the other things that I have to relate it to. I can't just pull out. I mean, even to think about like a meal that I loved or something, it's very difficult for me to do that.
So much dependent on context. We talk about that a lot.
But not like also, I mean, yeah, you love talking about context, but it's also like how when you have something back to back, it changes. Like the second whiskey to us, whatever it is, we'll never, we won't be able to taste fresh because we've already had this, whatever Irish we did thing that we, mm-hmm. you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's always the context in which back to back or like whatever you're eating. Like sometimes you have a great meal and you're like, oh, wasn't that, oh, for me, it was, I had white chocolate mashed potatoes. Which I would never recommend making, but in that context, with that sea urchin or whatever it was that I think was grilled octopus on top, okay. It was incredible. Like it was this combination of flavors that I couldn't even describe to you.
Was this Japanese food or what?
No, it was just like a high-end restaurant, okay. And it was one of the courses, and it was like, wow. Wait, what?
That's crazy.
But it was I guess I'm agreeing with you, not, is that the context matters a lot, and...
But it's not false, I think, is what you're getting at.
Yeah.
It's not as if we're being fooled by something. The experience of it is real.
Yeah.
It's just highly influenced by what's going on contextually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is what I think. I think this is incredibly hot. I've now added a lot of water to it. It is still hot. The only thing that concerns me is that I tend to think this when I start drinking.
Yeah.
I love things much more when I come back to them. But I think that this is really hot, is really changed with a lot of water, which is what partially makes me think that it really is hot. And it's not just me not being warmed up to it yet, the flavor profile is changing dramatically. I think it's an Irish. That's kind of my best guess.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm just kind of like flailing, trying to grasp onto something. So the last couple of sips I had, maybe a little like tart. Fruity, tart, sour, a little bit.
I can see the sour.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that I'm responding to just like the tingling hotness of the whiskey in general. But
there is something fruity there. I don't know like what fruit.
Irish fruit.
Yeah.
It's just
it's
Irish
a classic
fruit.
Irish fruit.
Yep.
You know how we all go to the grocery store and we buy the Irish
they're
fruit.
They're called potatoes.
Usually they're out of them.
That's called vodka.
So I have a follow-up question. Well, I don't know. So we talked about hard alcohol. I don't know if we asked the question of how you got into whiskey. Because you're clearly very knowledgeable, having programmed our entire experience here with this whiskey podcast. How did you get into it on a level of being kind of a connoisseur?
Oh, the answer to that is slightly embarrassing, but it probably centers on a competition to see who could be the most pretentious. So my college roommates and I, who I still refer to as my roommates in the present day, even though I haven't lived with them in some number of years, that is way too high to count. I think the way that I got into alcohol in general was through beer. I was in college as a freshman and sophomore. I wasn't drinking. My roommates were into craft beer really intensely. And this is back in 2000. It'd be like 2008. So this is before craft beer was really what it was. And
yeah,
so for us,
vanguards of,
anytime we had this, like the kitchen cabinets, anytime we'd find a new brewery, we'd put a bottle of that. And so eventually by the end of college, and it took us all the way through college to be able to accumulate enough breweries to be able to cover this entire thing, which is a very college thing to do. But at the same time, I look back at that and I think, like, anytime we could find a new brewery, we'd be like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And now it's like, you can't even begin to count.
Yeah.
So, you know, my first beer was at this English, I call them free houses, but it was a cask ale. It was an English cask ale at a traditional English pub. And my second beer was a Guinness at the Guinness factory. And then I came back to the United States. I got back on my birthday and I had a Black Velvet, which is stout and champagne, to celebrate my 21st birthday with my roommates. And so it's always been this, sort of higher end, more complex, more interesting, kind of stuff. I think I probably went 2-3 years of drinking before I ever actually drank a beer out of a can. You know,
it's so fancy.
No, it's like I said, it's just a pretension competition.
So you started off with taste, which is really cool.
Yeah, and so when my roommates and I started getting into whiskey, which took longer because there's a financial barrier to entry when you're a college student that didn't exist for beer. It just sort of naturally followed that we would continue this same sort of thing to see who could find the most, obscure, who could most appreciate the most obscure, and that's an ongoing competition that continues to this day. It's a little more self-aware and a little more lighthearted, but it is still absolutely there. So, while my first exposure to whiskey probably would have been, being at my college bar with my rugby team drinking terrible Jameson as shots, from there, the entry to real whiskey is probably almost certainly through them. Mm-hmm. And every time I see them, someone will bring something that is really interesting, really fun, really good. And I'm seeing them next weekend, so I'm really excited.
Oh, yeah.
For that.
Yeah. That's cool.
All right. So whiskey number two has been poured. I guess we could talk about color now, as we are wont to do. They all look
the same.
Remarkably similar.
I think two's maybe a little exactly the same.
Kind of remarkable how similar they are, right? Like,
I'm still concerned they're all going to be the same, which is absolutely going to my
fearfulness.
That
would be amazing if Erica just totally took the direction, was like, fuck that. And she just did whatever she wanted.
Don't you think, though, that it would be just really obvious, especially with that first pour that we had, with that first whiskey we had? Don't you think it would be like, wow, this is really hot again,
Well, or not.
If you wanted to disguise it, the way that you would do it is you would change the proof of it. You would put the same whiskey in three times. And I should have never said this. I should have just done this to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're ruining a great pick.
But you know what? Because I'm confident enough in this that I could do it.
Yeah.
Having you know it, and it still would not. I think it's that challenging.
This feels hot, too. Man.
I think it's less so.
It definitely is less so. I took a sip already because I'm
a cheater.
Jumping the gun. And it's a completely different whiskey.
So, we've established that the dynamic between Jack and I is that Jack is the one who knows things. This, I want to say bourbon with this one.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
It has all the right smells for bourbon.
Yeah, I'm getting that like corn, that like sweet corn thing.
Yeah.
Boy, that could not be more different.
Yeah.
The other one was very kind of interesting up front, but not overwhelming. And then it just built into this fiery, burning,
yeah,
kind of bitter. This one is much bigger in the front and then not really much going on at the end, which may just be a difference in alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Still kind of hot, right? But not as hot. Nearly like, as hot as the, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hot in terms of taste, but not in terms of feel. Like I can taste the alcohol at the end,
yep,
but I don't feel it through my entire existential existence.
I think you're, it's not apocalyptically hot, let's say. I think you're right though, in terms of, kind of the experience of drinking it. Whiskey number one kind of lingered, and it even grew the longer it kind of sat on your tongue. It became hotter.
Yeah.
This one kind of, there's this really interesting thing that kind of blunts it halfway through your experience of tasting. It's really interesting.
Like sitting here, I can taste whiskey, not drinking this glass, just having let it sit for a minute. And I'm not sure if I'm still tasting whiskey number one or whiskey number two. And I think it's probably an even odds proposition.
Yeah.
Hence the trouble of the show. Yeah. You'll never know what whiskey number two
right
would have tasted like if it had been the first one you had.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I enjoy the fact that I have not tried most of the whiskeys that I give you guys, is I don't have to agonize over order because it's true. Basically just random chance.
Yeah. That's been fun too. Cause we haven't really ascribed a lot to order.
So, all right. So I'm going to do that thing, that Chris Rett's thing where I'm just like flailing for something, but what is the weird, like, kind of earthy note that comes, like, halfway through? It's not right away. It's, like, halfway through, and it kind of blunts everything else. It's, like, earthy or smoky or something that's not... It's not sweet.
It's
not bitter.
Start to get a little bit... Jack and I always talk about this. A little bit of the, like, dark chocolate at the end.
Oh, really?
On this. Yeah, at the very end, I didn't pick up on it until, like, having let it sit for a few minutes.
Yeah,
sure. It's not the malt balls of the St. George.
Right.
But there's definitely something
which is.
Yeah, which I think is maybe what you're picking up earlier in, right, is something a little deeper, earthier, like, and I mean, like, dark chocolate, right?
Like, just like, you know, like when 75% cacao.
Right, whatever. When you put this chocolate and you're like, this is as much chalk as it is chocolate.
That's how they name it.
Cocoa powder.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's chocolate.
Chocolate.
No, I'm totally ready to hear that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I was going to say there is an earthiness to that too, and I think maybe that's the like cacao-ness of that chocolate kind of taste.
Yeah. Again, my susceptibility is such that I'm probably just now it's in my head and so that's what I'm tasting. But yeah, I totally buy that. I could go with that for sure.
I mean, if you ever listen to the science of esters and how they create flavor profiles and whatnot, it's fascinating. And all I can ever think is you could tell me anything tastes like anything in something as complex as hard alcohol, and I would probably ultimately believe it. It's funny. I think that this is really exceptionally good and I don't love it.
Huh.
My reaction is to say that I think this is a fantastic whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not my fantastic whiskey.
Interesting. Well, that's how I feel about your St. George.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy, like the way I've talked a couple times about how I'm trying to make this app. And one of the ways we tested it out is he said, oh, I have this, I want to get St. George single malt and I can't find it. And then I typed it into my search bar and I found it. And that whiskey, I recognize how good it is. It's really well made. But the final taste of it, I don't love. Like the final thing, it's malted, it's Whoppers.
Yep.
And I'm just like, this isn't my thing.
Wow.
It's such a good whiskey. I mean,
I feel like you have to be at a certain level in your knowledge and experience of whiskey to be able to taste a whiskey. Because I'm still at the place where I would, you know, taste a whiskey I don't like and say that's a bad whiskey. And so in order to taste a whiskey and say I don't like it, but this is really good, I feel like that's a level of sophistication and a level of nuance that I just haven't reached yet. Like, how are you able to arrive at something like that?
I think the thing for me is if I taste a clear expression of some flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I think bad whiskey is sort of like white noise. Yeah, and sure. A good whiskey is sort of one note or a couple notes in harmony where you can say, I see what you're doing here. I see what I'm supposed to be getting out of this.
Yeah.
And that's what I taste in this, that sort of flavor that we're talking about. Like, yeah. I get that. It comes through very cleanly. There's nothing that's muddying that up. Yeah. And I can say, like, that is a really good, that's a really well done whiskey.
There's a clarity to it, right?
Right.
That's what it's like. This is what they're trying to do. And you can recognize this is what was done.
Yeah.
And this is what it is.
This is what they're trying to do. And I'm getting that.
Yes. Right? Certainly.
Which is impressive.
Yeah. Right. Because when you taste bad whiskey, sort of, I mean, not to say that the first one is a bad whiskey, but to taste the first one at that heat, there's so much going on that you're just like, whoa. I don't know what the point of this is. I don't know what we're trying to accomplish. Dialing that down a little bit, I thought that came through much more cleanly.
Yeah.
But this, I think, is very, very good. It's just that note that's coming through is not my most beloved.
This is such an interesting note. I do think that, this, in terms of its uniqueness, which is kind of a hallmark for a good whiskey to me, in terms of its uniqueness, I do think this is another one that, like, I wouldn't really confuse with anything else.
Oh, right.
The more I drink it, the more I like it.
Yeah. I think if you had a full pour of this for, like,
yeah,
an hour, and you just sort of very slowly took your, time.
It's that maybe it's dark chocolate, but it's that very interesting, blunt kind of... I think it's bitter. I think it is a bitter.
Yeah. My first impression right off the bat before anyone spoke was, oh, that's bitter. Like, it's got a very bitter finish.
Right. Which isn't bad. I mean, like, the primary association I have with bitterness is, like, what beer and what coffee isn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, if it's bitter, you know that it's not very good. But maybe that's not even true with beer and coffee. It's certainly not true with whiskey, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, at least for my taste in coffee, it's certainly true. But I know that people really do like that bitter note in some coffees.
Yeah.
And there are beers that are designed to be bitter.
Yeah, IPAs are made on the fact that they're bitter, right?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think a dark chocolate is bitter, right?
Yeah.
Like that, I think that fits perfectly with what we're talking about in this. The more I drink this, the more I like this. This is...
Yeah, this is nice. I want to say tobacco and dark chocolate.
Yes, because, it's interesting because this isn't a smoky whiskey by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's pretty sweet.
But something about the taste, and not the smell at all, but the taste makes me want to say, like, not smoke necessarily, but, like, maybe ash or, like... something that's, been burnt, like charred kind of a little bit.
I get, those fit with me with tobacco. It's funny. I have this sort of aversion to tasting notes like tobacco because people don't taste tobacco. Like, I mean, I guess if you do chewing tobacco,
right,
but like you hear all these tasting notes all the time, like people, the famous one from, the Psalm documentary, like fresh rubber hose.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm already susceptible enough to these kind of tasting notes with the suggestion. And so if you give me a thing that I can't describe and then compare it to a thing I've never had,
right,
the room in which I can make these things align and go, yes, you're right, is so big.
Right. Yeah. I think it's personal. I think most tasting notes are personal. And the key is finding someone that you can resonate with. And for me, when I say tobacco, I imagine a pouch of pipe tobacco that you just open and you can like just stick your nose into it. And it's got that kind of bitter tingly, but it's also sweet.
Yeah.
and depending on what, you know, Cavendish or whatever you get into, but like it's got that kind of like bitter end, but also sweet middle.
But it's prior to it being smoked.
Right? Yeah, yeah, like, it's not smoked at all.
Which
right.
is really, that's a, actually a really interesting note. And I think, you know, kind of comparing, what was it, the rubber garden hose?
Yeah, yeah, yes. In Psalm, yeah.
That's a fresh cut garden hose.
Yeah, fresh cut, and freshly opened tennis balls is another one.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm a guy who's like never, you know, never packed a pipe. Like, I suppose I've had a few cigars and I've like smelled the cigar prior to smoking it.
Yeah.
So that might be the closest handle I have on it. But I, yeah, when you say kind of quote unquote fresh tobacco, like I'm not positive that I can hold on yeah. to that necessarily. It's a really interesting tasting note.
It's like, I think most tasting notes are personal. Like you, like in Psalm, they talk a lot about how it's really just a way for me to recognize a flavor that I can't put my finger on, right? It's a thing that I smell, and the closest thing I can say to it is fresh cut garden hose, mm-hmm. which means absolutely nothing, right?
Right, because it's this crossover between taste and smell at yeah. that point, right? Yeah. Everybody knows what fresh tennis balls smell like. It yeah. is one of those most definitive yeah. kind of things.
Sure.
But like to me, taste and smell are obviously overlaid. Their Venn diagram is very close, but they are still distinctly different things.
Yeah.
And so to compare one to the other, like to use a smell to reference a taste, to me confuses what I'm trying to figure out more than it elucidates it.
Right.
Well, they say that smell is the sense closest associated to memory, right? Mm-hmm. I have no clue what that actually means. But I will say that there are certain things. One of them is fresh cut grass, yeah. actually, because I played football in high school and college.
Yeah.
That just immediately when I smell it, it takes me back to, yeah. Yeah. to a certain time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's what that is. Even more so that smell being associated with memory is when you smell something and you stop and you go, "What is that? What am I trying to remember?" Yeah. And you just like, for me, I have these times where I literally just like stop in my tracks and I'm like, what is this? A, what am I smelling? And B, what is it bringing me back to? Yeah. Right. That something is resonating and I can't grab either. And it's this very kind of frustrating experience.
That's great. I mean, you kind of talked about with whiskey number one, having that experience of like, maybe it's not a memory, maybe it's not a smell, but it's like, I'm responding to something, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And I have that experience. I don't know if I've ever had that experience with whiskey, but I've definitely had that experience with other art forms, like films or music, where I'm like, this is hitting me for some reason, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
But that's a very compelling experience to have with something.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Man.
So I have two crazy, not crazy, why would I call them crazy? Two weird stories in that regard. So like ever since Baby Driver, I was able to pinpoint it. Car chase scenes, really well orchestrated car chase scenes yeah. make me cry.
Wow.
And I cannot figure it out. Like I can't like.
That is the weirdest Pavlovian response right? to anything. Like there's no other thing that could be like, other than.
It's so weird. It's like, and it's. Something about a really well done action scene and really good music. Yeah. And if it's an emotional moment in the movie, like things just all connect and I just like well up and I can't figure it out. But it's to your point, right? Where it's like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what that smell is, but I must like interrogate that feeling.
And so you're like John Wick is somebody else's Titanic. Yes, that's really.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really weird.
I have a question and I don't even know if I have an answer to my own question for myself, but does it matter?
If you know, if you can understand, I don't think so. Because I've started to just embrace it. Like lately when we see an action movie or something like that and I feel the thing, I just like lean in. I'm just like, all right, we're into it now. This is effective.
I don't know that it matters to enjoy the thing that you're doing at the moment, but I do think that it carries an interest level to me.
Yeah.
That the sort of self-understanding that comes from that, because if you extrapolate that, right, if you're having that kind of an intense emotional response to something about a car scene, and then you extrapolate that to what kind of other intense emotional responses am I having in my life to things that are more profound, right, than whatever car scene you watched when you were whatever age,
yeah.
and you think about how much that is dictating your life on a daily basis, the idea to me of being able to put a finger on those things is really interesting and seems to matter in and of itself. Yeah. Not that it's necessary to know it in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that kind of underlying understanding of what drives you as a person. I mean, because really, if you think about it, like the degree that if you're sitting there watching something as not, like objectively speaking, as non-emotional as a car chase scene.
Right.
And you're feeling like that's a really powerful thing yeah. that's driving that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, and it's worth interrogating. I would say like, it's not important, but it's really interesting to like look closer
yeah.
and like get into it and like, oh, why is that? What is, and I don't know, honestly, what it
it's
is.
It's compelling, right? It'll make you. So when I encounter that in like a film or like a piece of music or something like that, what it does is it makes me want to watch them. Film again.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean if we're equating this to whiskey, like whatever it does, whether it matters or not, one thing it's gonna do is make you have that whiskey another time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Because something about it is like is compelling you.
And I do. I have those whiskeys that are to me of a place in time.
Mm.
Yellow Spot is one of them. Mm-hmm. Every time I have Yellow Spot, I think of being in Vegas with Matt Cloud, the selector of today's whiskeys at this, very particular bar and just having a very nice conversation with him in this, cigar bar while playing chess.
Oh, that's great.
It is a very, very particular memory for me. And yeah. I have sort of other things like that where I just like, yes, this is this place. And every time I try this thing, I think of this place. It's one of the reasons that I like going to wineries. Jack, this past weekend, went to one of my favorite wineries, Law.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Law wines because every time I have Law wines, I think about being in this really beautiful place with surrounded by people that I care about. Because every time I've been there with a whole group of friends. And so to me, every time I try that, even if it were to be a not particularly good bottle, it carries such a strong resonance with those things that mm-hmm. this is fantastic. You know, and that's why, frankly, that's why I like things that taste and are unique because those memory associations come through yeah. much stronger than something that is, you know, generic, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have no memory associations with like wheat bread.
Right. Cause that's all you eat.
Right. That's just,
you've had it in too many situations yeah. so yeah. that there's no,
or to put it in alcohol terms, like a lager, right? That yeah. just is so many things to you in your life. But that like the, again, this past weekend, Jack and I had this really weird raspberry slushy beer yeah. thing, right? That anytime I taste some kind of raspberry slushy thing, probably for the rest of my life, I'm yeah. going to imagine standing in Paso Robles drinking this weird beer yeah. because it was exceptionally weird.
Yeah.
Interesting. So quintessentially good whiskey set aside maybe let's say an equally good whiskey that's weird. You're going to taste the weird one and be like, something to this one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm probably going to prefer the weird one.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not in the moment, but over the long run.
Well, and it's also foreground versus background, right? Like sometimes you want a background whiskey. Like sometimes you just want something that's not confusing or hard or weird.
Yeah.
That you just want to like relax, like a Four Roses or like a, you know, like an Elijah Craig or something where it's just like, I don't need to think too hard about this. I'm just going to have me a nice bourbon.
So this is where I'm weird. I don't like that.
You don't like that ever.
So I have ever? This ever, ever. I have this viewpoint, which one of my friends described as don't eat break room donuts.
Oh.
That we all have our vices. We all have our things that you enjoy. And if you're going to do them in some notable way.
Oh,
right?
My gosh.
So this is kind of my viewpoint towards alcohol. Like my view is you cannot waste alcohol because the only benefit of alcohol is that you enjoy it. So at the point at which you're not enjoying it, it has no more utility. It's just bad for you.
Yeah.
And so for me, if I'm going to drink something, I want it to be something that is at the forefront, that is leading the conversation, that is, you know, at the front and center of my experience. And if sure. not, I'm just as inclined to not have anything. In fact, I would prefer it.
Don't have break room donuts.
Yep.
I swear I'm going to use that. That's amazing.
I love it. I can take no credit for that whatsoever. But when it was one of those things, when I heard it, it was very profound and has become one of the driving mottos of my existence.
Oh, that's great. I love it. Okay. I also love it practically. Like, yeah. Next time break room donuts show up to my place of work, I'm going to be like, all right, everybody in the car, if we're going to eat donuts, we're going to do it right.
Donuts, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're not eating this crap. We're going
Yeah.
That's great.
Unless, of course, the one caveat is if you happen to really love and enjoy break room donuts, in which case you should eat break room donuts.
Right. And I think that's the interesting thing is, like, if you find yourself, and this goes to my, like, the bigger point that we've talked about a lot is, like what you like, there's no reason to be influenced by anyone else.
Absolutely.
If you like Jameson, the thing we've shit on earlier, drink it. And enjoy it and talk about it and be the ambassador of Jameson and be like, hey, this is my thing and this is why I like it. Because I like hearing why people like things. And
absolutely.
If that's your thing, that's your thing. I am like 53% on your side. There is.
So I win.
Right. In your world, you win.
Right. In my world, all I need is 51%. Yeah. So if I get 53, I'm there.
But like, I think that the other 47 for me is like, there are situations in which I just want to taste a whiskey and maybe not think about it. Because they're also, I mean, the thing we're ignoring is that like alcohol does make you feel something, right? Like it can make you tipsy, it can make you buzzing or whatever.
Sure.
And so sometimes I think there is that sometimes isn't like a thing that I go down that path, right? Where I want to feel a certain way. And so then it's like, I'll have a drink.
And I think that's the difference for me is if you could take the alcohol out of alcohol.
Yes.
I would love that. Not for all times. There are certainly times.
Yeah.
But very rarely am I driven. In fact, I would probably say never would I drink something just to become intoxicated.
Right. I mean, we're all of the age now where like that's just impractical for the next day. Right?
Yes. But if you could take the alcohol out of alcohol, I would be able to try so many more interesting things.
Yeah.
But I tend to find myself when I'm in that position that you're talking about. I tend to be around people that are like-minded that would enjoy the shared experience of having this thing.
Right.
And so to have something that is notable or otherwise interesting adds to rather than distracts from what we're doing, which probably ties back to this whole pretension competition. if I'm being honest about it, but you know, that is the life that I live that I have chosen for myself for whatever reason. And so I think that's kind of what drives that. For me,
I think it's beautiful. I don't know a lot of guys that go to Vegas to play chess.
I was actually there to go watch rugby. I did no gambling, okay. But there's a big tournament every year, and I go with a retired partner at my work, and I go with my friend Matt Cloud, who is one of my college teammates, and sometimes various other people pop in. But it is very much a trip built around going to sit out at UNLV's college football stadium and watch a bunch of international rugby players.
Mm.
And so in that context, sitting in a cigar bar at the end of a very, very long day of drinking beer in the sun, having a good, really, really good Irish whiskey sort of makes a bit more sense than throwing it into what I think most people associate with Vegas.
Yeah.
Absolutely. True or false, I know exactly one rugby player. True or false, you spend 3 hours beating the crap out of each other, and then after the game's over, you all go drink, and it's like this communal...
Yeah, that is true. I mean, it's obviously not the relationship between every team,
sure.
And it changes a little bit depending on the level that you're at, but that sort of is at the backbone of the sport, and I have a whole host of weird stories and experiences and things that revolve around that. But that is like, if someone were to say, this is all I know about rugby, I would be very content with that being all that you know about a sport that I love.
Oh, that's great.
You guys ready for the third one?
Yes.
I am. We haven't been naming our wizards.
Oh, that's right. We need to give Billy the full experience.
I was gonna say, this is the one thing I know you guys do. This is like, I get the end product and none of the process. And so it makes no sense in the end.
Yeah, it never makes sense to you, but it's delightful for us.
Especially because I've never tried the whiskey. It's just like all this thing you'd spend all this time picking out. Like, it is an apple raspberry explosion extravaganza. And I'm like, oh, is it now?
All right, so
I mean, maybe that says something about the whiskeys, but I don't know.
What's the first one?
Man,
it's so hot is the thing.
Okay, here's the first thing that popped in my head is Hot Mess.
It's grain. There's just grain in there. I didn't know. I didn't talk about this at the time, but to me, it tastes like grain. It's like a, I don't. But I couldn't tell you what kind of grain. Just generic grain fire.
Grain fire. Grain fire is good. That reminds me of where I grew up.
You did say, I think at the time, maybe a little after, you did say wheat, right?
I did. I don't know why.
Okay, but you did kind of toss it in there. I don't know. Yeah. Something from your subconscious, maybe.
I like grain fire. I think that's kind of what it is. Because the more I added to it, that's where the wheat came from. The more water I added to, the more it tasted like wheat to me. Hmm. But I don't know if that's real. It's just, it could be barley that I was tasting. I don't know.
Yeah. Sure. I don't think it had that kind of custard quality that wheat has, but it definitely, I don't know. That was it was a strong whiskey. When I think of wheat, I think of custard. Like that's my landmark for a wheated whiskey.
Okay.
And then the second one?
Dark chocolate is what comes through. That kind of earthy dark chocolate.
I like that a lot. And I will say that, like...
It could be chocolate.
I was going to go with chocolate rain.
So we've got grain fire and chocolate rain. So we've got whiskey number three.
Hmm. We are smelling, we are smelling.
Oh, man.
I know what you're going to say.
You do?
Yeah.
I really enjoy the smell of this.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
I you think I was going to say much. Brine?
Yeah, I did. You're like go-to note.
Yeah, I'm not getting it.
Oh, good.
It's rich.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the smell of that is very rich and deep.
So the first thing that came into my head, which this does not mean this is correct, I'm already second guessing it, was rose. That was like the first thing that like jumped into my head.
Jack and I learned this thing together. Maybe Jack already knew it. I learned it when I was with Jack, which was about smelling whiskey versus smelling wine, which is whiskey, you put your nose in the glass and you breathe through your mouth. That way you don't get that overwhelming alcohol burn in your nose.
Yeah.
Yes.
It makes a huge difference, but what I've taken to doing is doing both.
Yeah.
Cause you get very different kind of notes depending on what you do. But the only way to get the like sort of top flavor notes is to do the mouth breathing.
Yeah.
It's the only time mouth breathing is more sophisticated than not mouth breathing.
Right.
Wow. My mind is blown. I was going to say it's literally blown, but it's not literally blown. It's figuratively blown right now.
I get a lot of apple off of that and the smell.
Me too.
Yeah. Green apple for me.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that. There's something.
I haven't tried it yet, but green apple is like overwhelming for that.
So an actual green apple.
Yeah, like not the flavored, like Jolly Rancher. Right. Like
it's sort of like if you've ever had really good brandy where it tastes exactly like the whole point of really good brandy is just to emulate the fruit. I get that kind of level of green apple off of this.
Very fruity. Yep.
I can't imagine it tasting like that.
So I'm going to forever call this sniff the Billy sniff.
I am honored.
Fairly or not, I've been calling, opening my mouth and breathing in through my mouth and nostrils at the same time, the Jack Mottman sniff, but doing the Billy sniff where it's nose in, just breathing through the mouth. Absolutely. That like apple, that fruity apple thing is coming through.
Oh, and it tastes like it.
It does.
It does. It really tastes like it.
Like I really got it when I tasted it.
Wow.
Oh, stunned silence there for a second.
What did you do, Matt Cloud?
What did you do?
It's like Applejack. Although I've never actually had real Applejack, so I couldn't tell you what real Applejack tastes like.
Yeah.
Applejack is Jack Daniels that's supposed to taste like apples?
Yeah, it's just, no.
Okay. No, it's not?
No. Applejack, so the only way you can find Applejack as a normal person is Layard's, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, Applejack, which is not true Applejack. It is something different, but it's really good in cocktails, especially if you can get it at like barrel proof. And but it has a bit of apple. It's sort of like apple whiskey is how I would describe it.
Oh, so it's made from apples.
Yes.
I don't know.
That is a good, there is this amazing quote about it though, that I don't have in front of me and don't have memorized, but it comes from the New York Times about how Applejack is the most evil of whiskeys, and that while a man intoxicated on whiskey may beat his wife and burn his house, a man on Applejack would burn the entire city and play violin whilst reciting poetry. Like, it's just this unbelievable quote that was actually printed in the New York Times, and it's left me with this fascination to try real true Applejack. Yeah. But I have never actually seen a true bottle of it in front of me, which so maybe means it tastes bad.
Yeah, maybe.
So no correlation whatsoever to Jack Daniels.
No.
Every time I hear Jack in this context, that's the first thing I think of.
Doesn't say a lot about Jack.
No.
Actual Jack.
Actual Jack, not a guy.
Actual Jack, you were the last Jack I think of.
Huh.
And by that, I mean the second Jack I think of.
So oh.
After Jack Daniels. I feel like this is also very hot. Like, of the tastings we've had, I feel like this is the most consistently hot tasting we've had thus far.
It reminds me, I'm having that memory thing now.
Yeah.
I don't have any more to add to that.
You just great. Have a memory. It's that thing you can't put your finger on.
That's great. Are we thinking all whiskey? All, like, straight whiskeys here? Like, no scotches?
Oh, I think Billy was saying number one he thought was Irish. Number two, we didn't really settle, but I think we all maybe thought bourbon.
Yeah.
And this was the first thing I thought, but I have no idea what I'm talking.
Yeah. This one, because of the appley-ness, must be a bourbon. But I really don't know.
It's light. I mean, it is just a light. You know, my first smell, I thought, this is like deep and rich, and tasting it is not, which is why I brought up the different kinds of smelling the glass, because the first one I just did a full on nose in the glass, through the nose, smell all the, you know, esters and alcohol. Yeah. It is light though.
Yeah, it's easy drinking. Like it doesn't disappear, but it's like the beginning and middle are very light.
I think because beer was my first sort of home. I still relate everything to beer in terms of tasting. And to me, this is like a really good lager.
Oh, interesting.
Like nothing about it is overwhelming, but you can drink it without paying any attention at all. But if you pay attention to it, you're like, oh, there's some really good nuance and, you know, interest here. At the same time, I definitely get like a whole bunch of like Jolly Rancher apple on the front of the tasting, but I don't know that I would have gotten that had I not paid so much attention to it on, you know, the forefront.
So are you saying this is a whiskey that would be easy to take for granted?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, so does this, with your donut philosophy of life, does this fall in the category of things I don't really want in my life?
So I think I'm going to get obnoxious about my donut philosophy because why not? I think the point is sort of an intentionality, right? To make a point to appreciate the things that you're going to do. And if you're going to appreciate it, then you should do it. And if you're not, you're not, right? Don't mindlessly pick up a donut, eat a donut without paying attention to it. You know, and if you think about eating a donut intentionally, you're probably going to put in the extra effort to go get a really good donut and really enjoy it. This, I think, does kind of fall in that category because there really is something to it if you pay attention to it. But like I think it would be very easy to miss.
Yeah, that's key, I think, is if you weren't paying attention, this would fly right by.
Yeah.
It's like you said, it's like a really good Pilsner. Where like when you have a really good Pilsner, it's like, or a lager, it's like, oh, there's more here than like the Midwestern in me thinks Bud Heavy, you know, when I have a lager.
Bud Heavy.
I said that for you.
I knew you did.
Do you think it's more difficult to have kind of a tasting note that's obvious for lack of a better word, something that, you know, you immediately taste it and you go, huh, that's really interesting. I've never had a whiskey that tasted like that before. Or do you think, like, is subtlety more difficult or less difficult?
From whose perspective?
From the perspective of the people making the whiskey. Like,
subtlety, I think, is the harder to, because, like, it's sort of what happened, again, to tie things back to beer, but it's sort of what happened with beer is Americans went, I can make IPAs that blow people's minds. Let me shove all of the hops into this. And we got to this point where everybody had these like unbelievably hoppy IPAs that then became incredibly difficult to distinguish between one another because they were all as many hops as you could possibly infuse into, you know.
Yeah. Stone brewing problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's much harder to make a good lager, which is why I think people don't do it.
Yeah.
I think it's really challenging to do at a high level. From a tasting perspective, I think that, you know, things that are really big and aggressive are more challenging to appreciate, where, like, I think the beauty of a good lager is you can just sort of, oh, this is really interesting. There's a lot going on here. But you don't feel that same drive to name and label and...
Yeah, it's like I'm like in beer mode now. Like when you have like a stout, it's like the coconut, like you get all those flavors and they're almost so obvious. Even the subtle ones are relatively obvious. When you could do the same thing in like Lagerland or Pilsnerland, it's really hard to label. It's just like, this is beer, but it has that thing about it, that like crying in the movie theater thing where you're like, something about this is resonating with me that I can't actually pinpoint.
So here's a story on this end. So my dad is 30, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years sober. And right at the end of my undergrad college experience, we were in Russia, and Russia has this non-alcoholic drink that I have no idea what the name was and probably couldn't pronounce it anyway, but it is a like wheat based drink. And I watched my dad drink this and be like, what is this? And it looks like beer and it tastes like beer and it smells like beer, but it has no alcohol, right?
Yeah.
And watching my dad, you know, 30 years since his last beer, sit there and struggle and then have this moment where he goes, oh my God, it's beer. It is beer.
That's great.
And like just this sort of, you know, enthusiasm on his face for having been able to identify this thing.
Yeah.
I will remember that. That will be one of my memories of my dad forever.
That's amazing.
It was just really, really interesting experience.
It's like Eric and I call it having a sliver, like a brain sliver. And I mean, she gets them a lot where it's just like you see a character on TV or an actor and you're like, I need to figure out what I know them from. So you go to their IMDb and you scroll and scroll until in 1996, you realize they were in The Net. And they were a sub, you know, a character and like Sandra Bullock. And you're like, oh yeah, that was the third main, you know, whatever. Yeah. And you do that thing. And like, it's that, but when you can get there on your own, it is so satisfying. And I think that's one of the reasons I like doing tasting notes. It's like the whole experience is sort of brain sliver inducing where you're like, I'm going to try a thing that I know doesn't actually have any of these ingredients. Like none of the flavors we're tasting came from apples.
Right.
They didn't come from pineapple or whatever, or fiery wheat grain town. Like, I mean, it did come from grain, but we don't know. Like, so like all those like weird complex notes we have, they're not real, but we still want to figure them out. And I think that's why I love this so much is it's like figuring out, what is that thing and what is that memory?
That's great.
And it is amazing to me. And this is why I think I like things that are weird, is that these all come from the same foundations.
Yeah.
Right? And they end up in drastically different places. Yeah. And I think that, I don't know, that is just like a really fascinating, fun thing. And so when someone can do something that stands out that is like, wow, that is way this, like the experience I had the first time I tried that St. George when I was like, that's chocolate at the end of whiskey, which I had never had that experience before. Yeah. That was like a really profound thing. And that's a huge part of why I love that whiskey, even though it doesn't sit sort of in the heart of the whiskeys that I love. Like, it is not a straight down the line where my heart normally resides. It's just that I had this really profound, like, damn, I know exactly what that is. Yeah. It is so good and it is so unique, and I could pick this out of a lineup and watch today. I like haven't picked it out of the lineup. But that's really how, you know, I think that the exceptional things are interesting. And I think that's where beer was really interesting for a long time until everyone started doing the exceptional things. And the other part about it, I think, is that, like, you know, if you try a coconut stout and you're like, yes, this tastes like coconut, undeniably, because it's like 30% coconut.
Yeah.
You know, like, to make a coconut beer, you put coconut in it.
Yeah.
To make a whiskey that tastes like apple, there's no apple.
Yeah.
Which I think makes whiskey harder to appreciate. And I always think about the intentionality of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you have a whiskey that turns out and it tastes like chocolate at the end, did these people say, I want this to taste like chocolate? Or did they make a whiskey and go, holy shit, this tastes like chocolate?
Yeah.
And I think that's like, that resonates with my favorite way of creating. So one of my favorite things that I do is when I make something and it has to like sort of sit and like ferment, if you will.
Yeah.
And then I come back to it and I'm like, realize, oh, this is what it is. Now let's make it better so that that exemplifies what it is.
Totally.
So like, when I was in college, I did all these experiments with like taking negatives and just scratching them, like not actually taking a photo, like just taking the negative and just like scratching it against a brick wall and then exposing that in the enlarger and seeing what I got. And once I kind of came into my own, I was able to manipulate the scratching in a way that I knew that the art form was good at, right? So you could then take what you did and make it better. And so I think a lot of that goes into like barrel picks, right?
Yeah.
Like St. George, they make more than just the single malt.
Right.
So they pick those barrels to fulfill that thing. So it is intention, but it's also, this is what happened with our barrels, right? Like this is what happened when we let it sit in this corner for 3 months and then over there for 9 months. And then we put that and that's what it is.
Yeah. You know, your process makes me think of is, comedies on television, they're almost always bad in the first season. And then they have some time off to sit back and look at what they created. And then they hone in on those things and it suddenly becomes very good.
It's Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec or The Office. They're both that way very much, where the first season is like, I don't enjoy this. And then they have that, oh, we need to make Michael likable moment. And then suddenly the show takes off.
And they realize Parks and Rec is not The Office. Oh, now it works.
Yeah, or like Leslie Knope can't be an idiot. Yeah. To me, that was the Parks and Rec one, is she has to be a likable. It's almost exactly the same Office problem, which is the irony because they were creating The Office again.
It was so weird.
I think, Seinfeld, Simpsons, I think they all. Yeah, totally. I have that exact experience as a screenwriter, which is that the first time I write the first draft of a screenplay, I have no clue what my screenplay is about.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like I'm reading somebody else's screenplay.
Yeah.
And I go through it and I look at it and I say, oh, okay, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And then exactly as Jack describes, you know, with the second draft, I say, okay, now that I know what this is about, how do we make it better? How do we do that better?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. I do think it's more impressive when you can make something, when there's tasting notes in something that you didn't put into it. You know what I mean? There's something, as a creator, you know, I'm coming from film, from the level of like film or movies. I think Jack is a little bit too, obviously. But it's really satisfying when you identify something in the thing that you've made that you didn't necessarily put into it, you know, with the coconut stout, it's like, well, yeah, I put a shit ton of coconut in it. There's something really satisfying about like, oh, well, let's see what happened here. And you look into it and it's like apple. Yeah. You're like, wow, that's weird. I didn't put apple into it, but it's there. That doesn't mean it's not in there. you know, like the tasting is correct about what you've made. You just didn't necessarily intend it.
Yeah.
It strikes me as, I don't know, again, to lean on pretension, but kind of how the Greeks would describe like art, right? So the difference between like painting and sculpting. Sculpting is this uncovering what is in the thing and making it more and revealing it more, right? And painting is more this setting out to create this thing from nothing.
Yeah.
I always thought it was interesting to read, you know, these Greek sculptors talk about like, you know, how they know when a sculpture is done, because you have all these sculptures that are sort of rough, and it's just like, well, no, it's when I uncovered the thing that was in it.
Yeah.
My view is always sort of like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably a lot of what whiskey is. It's like, I found the thing in this was apple, and now I'm going to set out to reveal the apple.
Yeah.
That's great.
And make it more apple.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Like, it's an interesting way of thinking about creating art and creating whiskey, and like, really it comes down to blending. It comes down to like, how can I take this thing I taste, like what goes good with it? You know, like some ryes will like try to make their stuff more peppery or whatever, so it accentuates the other flavors better. And like we were just talking about, like the subtlety is really hard because you want supporting flavors. Like if you do, you know, if this is apple and then you throw in like, you know, spiced banana, like it may not work. Like, so it's like that ability of the distiller to say like, okay, like let's try to make this the thing. And then like, let's, when we blend barrels to release a batch, let's like try to make sure we can do that. Those complementary things.
And that's why I think a place like St. George is so cool, because St. George whiskey is all blends. They don't do any distilling of their own whiskey, but they are a distiller. And they work really hard at doing these brandies that taste exactly like the fruit. And so they do both sides of this process, right? Where they say, okay, we're going to make this with not coconut, because there's no coconut brandy, but we say, you know, here's a pear brandy. Let's bring out all the pear, which would be very different from that blending process. But the fact that they're blending things that they know someone else distilled, they sort of have this full perspective of what they're doing. It's a really, really interesting place. But I've always thought that blending whiskeys gets knocked too much.
Definitely.
Because I think it's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm staring at a thing that says Bordeaux on my wall. We went to Bordeaux a couple of years ago, and the crazy thing about France and Bordeaux is like, they can only make wine out of the grapes that they grow. So like a 2012 might be better than a 2013 because that was just a better year.
Yeah.
And so like, you don't have the ability to blend, right? You have to release it, and that's what it is. So part of me falls in love with that idea of like, this is what happened and this is what it is, right? So you can experience it the way it is. Whereas blending, to bring it back to whiskey, is really about a consistent product. Like Johnny Walker Black, doesn't matter. You go to the store, you say, I want Johnny Walker Black. You know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
So part of me is like, it's almost like they stopped evolving, right? It's almost like they were like, okay, well, we've discovered black. Let's move on. Let's move on to green and blue and ghost white and all the different things. But it's interesting because it's like, there's a better word there, but it left my head, which is more fortuitous to like just be as it is, or is it better to like try to create a consistent product?
Which is more sophisticated,
I think it's what you're trying to accomplish, right? Like wine is history telling. You try, like, you know, people line up these vertical tastings year after year after year, and you could taste the history of that region.
Yeah.
You know, like if you were to do a vertical tasting in Napa over wines over the last, you know, 3 years and then the next 2 years, right in the middle, there'd be this year where there's all this ash and fire.
Yeah.
Right. And you would be able to taste the history of this place. You know, but if you want this thing that people can come back to again and again and, you know, sort of call home, then you're going to blend that out so that there is this, you know, sort of home base, this consistent thing that you you know, identify with and love and say, I want to recreate this and whatever I have to do to recreate this, then it's, you know, instead of sort of embracing the elements in the history, it is taking charge and creating the thing that you intend. Yeah. Which again, I think is sort of like painting versus sculpting.
Yeah, it really is. It's interesting. Like that's the difference between blending versus distilling. I mean, not like being a craft distiller,
right,
where you're like, I made this, I honed it, and it was a sculpture. Whereas a blender is like, I painted this beautiful scotch.
Yep. And look, some painter or sculptor is going to be like, that Billy dude is a moron. He's clearly never done either.
Right.
And they're 100% right. So I apologize if I've gotten that egregiously wrong.
No, I've heard the same thing.
But certainly blending takes, I mean, if you're attempting to reach a certain taste profile, like to my mind, that takes a mind-boggling amount of skill.
Yeah. And to not go blind, like,
and yeah, how many times do you have to do this to sit down? Because at some point you burn out your taste buds, and it is not long after you start.
Yeah.
How many different days?
It's got to be so time consuming because it's like you can only do so much in a day.
It's amazing. It's actually a good segue to our infinity bottle.
Oh yeah.
Yes. So I'm totally ignorant as to the infinity bottle.
Right.
Speaking of blending.
Yeah, let's go straight. Let's reset the clock.
All right. Hey, did we name this?
I don't know.
Should we call it Applejack?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Applejack.
It's Applejack.
If it is Applejack, I will be the most victorious feeling person on this earth. I know it's not Applejack, but man, I would be.
All right. So where we do the infinity bottle, which is a little blend of everything we've had ever on the show, is I just pour a little in my glass, take a little taste, and we see what might make it better.
Oh, interesting. This is painting and sculpting.
Ooh, this is so different from what we've had just previously. Like, this is the Scotch realm.
You know the weirdest thing about before I try this is that I have picked everything that is in this and tasted none of it. And now I'm going to taste it all together at once.
It's true.
I feel weirdly responsible for something that I had no idea was being created and had no purpose in doing.
And so a lot of the time we kind of chose our favorites, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Like, so Billy's like having the best.
It is peaty.
It is.
It is peaty. I have not tasted it yet, but I can just smell it and go, oh yes, guests have liked peat. And I haven't even picked a ton of peaty things.
And that, I mean, I said that from day one, be careful with peat because you add a drop and it will completely
and
change.
And it is just like,
because all we had was Laphroaig. That was the only peaty thing you've ever chosen.
Yeah, and that is the nose on this. It's just.
The taste isn't super peaty, I don't think, but tell me what you think.
So I was at the Edison.
You went to the Edison.
I went to the Edison. It was delightful.
I'm glad you liked it.
And I had a Laphroaig. It was delicious.
Oh, good.
The tin.
Good choice.
This is the best example of why blending is super hard.
Yes. Which is to say it's not good.
That is the white noise that we were discussing earlier.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because, I mean, I know what's in there. And it's like some things I can pick out. Other things are like, it's gone. It is 100% gone. So the question is, do we think anything on our table right now will make that better?
Two. One would make it worse. Three would add absolutely nothing. Two would make it better.
All right. Pop in the top. Going straight in.
I think that's brilliant. Yeah, aside from the peatiness, for sure, this the white noise comment, I totally, I mean, every time I kind of taste whatever that is, I guess it's peat.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, we're dealing with scotch, and it stands out to me. But, yeah, aside from that, it's difficult to discern much else.
Oh. It did mellow it out.
Hey, I'll take that. You know, it's funny. I always think about Irish whiskey. I was trying to think of like what it is that I think defines Irish whiskey. Yeah. To me, Irish whiskey is scotch without peat.
Oh.
Okay.
That may be entirely inaccurate in terms of actual process.
It is, but go on.
I mean,
glad to have that validated. But that's kind of where it is. It's like I get the grain, and like to me, scotch doesn't have that really deep, rich molasses kind of flavor.
Yeah.
And when you take out the peat, I get this really grain forward spirit that doesn't have any peat. And that's why I always think of it. It may also just be this sort of geographical nonsense that I've churned up in my head that these things are by each other, therefore they must be related to each other.
Yeah.
For me, that returns me back to square one, because the only thing that I can hold on to and say, oh, maybe this is a scotch, is the peat.
Yeah. So. That is weird now.
Yeah.
That went from being white noise to having an intense middle flavor that entirely conflicts with what comes through on the end.
Mm. Oh.
That's really interesting. Now, if you gave that to me just not knowing it came from the Infinity bottle.
Yeah.
The last one I would have said, this is terrible. That I might have thought was something somebody did
on purpose. Yeah.
But the end of it is very confusing.
Hmm.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I kind of feel like the peat is gone.
That was weird. I had the same experience.
That's
I
felt like so the peat strange.
Was invisible.
I feel like we destroyed the peat.
It's still there in smell. Like, I still smell it.
It comes through at the very end, but it's in this mix of all these other flavors now.
That's yeah.
Because you pour it, I mean, it's what? Probably 20% number two?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a hefty amount.
Yeah, that I put a lot in there. So it's definitely been overtaken.
Well, but that's kind of the greatness.
Yeah.
And the second taste of that was much better than the first.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was better than anything that we tasted today that was done intentionally.
Yeah.
Speaking of, do we get to find out what we've had? What's the process there? So normally we would make a phone call.
We are going to make a phone call.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man.
All right, great.
If he picks up.
If he is right. So I have this great Matt Cloud whiskey story if we have an interest before we call him.
Go ahead.
That would be great.
So I came home one night, Matt Cloud, so we used to live together in college. He was particularly upset about something to this day. I don't know what. And he went and we had a bottle of Jameson in the house that was considered expensive. To the point where after the story, one of our other roommates was upset that he never got compensated for the Jameson that disappeared in the story.
He $20?
College in Missouri, right? Our rent was $275 a month. We're talking about like 10% of your monthly rent.
Right.
So we had these not full pint glasses, probably 3/4 pint glasses that we'd gotten from the bar that we went to, because we knew all these people that worked at the bar. And so all the glasses in our house came in this bar. And Matt poured himself a 3/4 pint glass of Jameson.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, no. I watched Matt down this 3/4 glass, pour himself another, and then decide he had to go upstairs to go to the bathroom, at which point I took the glass, I put it full under the sink. I took another identical glass out of the cupboard. I ran water in it, and I set it back in the same place, empty. Matt came back downstairs. He goes, damn, did I already drink that second pint glass of whiskey? And I said, yeah, you should probably go to bed. At which point he went up and went to bed. I woke up the next morning at like 9 a.m., and Matt was gone. What? Where did he go? How did he even wake up? He'd left and gone to the gym. He had gotten drunk and sobered up from his pint glass of whiskey in the entire time he was asleep and was able to get up and go to the gym. And every time I wake up hungover, I think about that angrily.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is a Herculean feat.
And I also remind him consistently that I saved his life.
Good. All right, we're going to call Matt Cloud, see if we can get him to pick up the phone.
Like, literally.
Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hello, all of you.
All right, so we have done your tasting.
Okay.
So we would love, first of all, the tradition is that I take an unnecessary amount of time and tell you what we've named them. So, number one, we are calling...
Grain fire.
Number two, we are calling chocolate rain. And number three, just play along, Matt. We were calling Applejack.
So how right or wrong do you think we are, Matt?
Well, I think the spirit of burning is right. It's fairly accurate.
That's good.
That's cool.
So can you tell us what we've had?
As far as I know.
That's concerning.
let's see, what was number one? Number one was the Brothers Texas Wheated Bourbon.
Wow.
Oh, Jack with the wheat call.
Way to go, Jack.
Only after we added water did the wheat come out.
Matt, do you know Matt, do you know the proof on that?
I don't offhand.
It is hot. I mean, it is hot. Aggressively hot.
There's a lesson in putting some water or ice cubes in your whiskey.
That's good.
Which is exactly what we did. See, leave it to Balcones to come up with something that is really interesting.
Yes. So it's not whiskey. It's a malt spirit, but it has honey and fig liquor and some other floral ingredients.
I would have never known that was not whiskey.
Yeah, it's really tasty.
And it's the fig is what I think that we were tasting. That kind of earthy, rich. It's, boy, that is really, really good.
Yep.
Interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up. Because I totally messed this up. The first one wasn't actually a wheated bourbon. The first one probably had wheated bourbon in it. What it was the Barrel Whiskey Infinity Project, which is essentially a Solera-aged... you're going to get a bottle of a bunch of young whiskeys and a bunch of old whiskeys. They're kind of taking a Solera-aged approach to whiskey, but they're not using all of the same spirit. They're using different spirits. So it's an adult suicide, if you would.
Wow. So Matt, because I know you've worked in this realm in a weird way before, what is Solera aging?
Solera aging is a process where you can get a lot of really, really old, rich spirit with a lot of new, younger, a little bit more of a bite spirit. So there's a little bit of – think of it like a – I guess this is going to be a terrible analogy, but a waterfall that goes through different pools, right? So most of the stuff that goes into the what you're going to consume is a little bit younger. But you've got 8 year, 10 year, 15 year, 24 year, maybe even older. That all comes in different proportions. Older, obviously, is going to be a smaller proportion. Younger is going to be a higher proportion. But they blend that all together.
And that's commonly used in rum, right?
Yes, it's commonly used in rum. It's commonly used in brandy and cognac, especially.
Huh.
And port.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is hot, and I'm looking at the bottle, and it is 119.3 proof.
Yeah.
So it is about as hot as it gets.
That is crazy.
That explains why I could water it down to almost half and still go, wow, this is hot.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you picked up the wheated flavors, because I bet there is wheated bourbon in it.
Yeah, I mean, there could be.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It also explains some of what we've been talking about, white noise, when you're not able to pick up sort of the clear intention of the whiskey and if it has a lot of different things in it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. And also, so we're thinking this is a giant amount of young whiskey, right? Which would account for the higher proof alcohol.
Yeah. I would say that's probably at least 60% 7 years and younger.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
And the third one, Billy, is every... week on the show, we've given away a bottle for whatever was best. And I've taken that taster, whatever's left, and now I've poured that into its own infinity bottle, which I'm going to get now.
So this is...
That is incredible that it comes out that
So the third whiskey, which Matt had nothing to do with, is an infinity blend, also like the first one, of everything we've had, but only the best. Wow. So it's things people have chosen. I couldn't pour it back in a bottle, so I poured it in this bottle.
It is fascinating. It is so, like, to compare the two infinity bottles is the weirdest experience, because the other infinity bottle is like just so intense with everything that you can ever imagine a whiskey tasting like.
Yeah.
And the other one is this very subtle, interesting apple flavored. Apparently people like apple.
Yeah.
It's very consistent. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't taste like a bunch of different whiskeys. It tastes like one whiskey to me.
Yeah. It tastes cohesive.
That's really weird. That's so crazy.
I am just mind blown by that. I can't believe that you could mix all those different things together and come out with something that is so, I don't know, like a lager, right? It's like if you just poured all these beers together, you're certainly not coming out with a lager.
Yeah.
This is like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, right? The twist at the end.
The twist.
Wow.
That is fascinating. Also, can I just say that Balcones is incredible and they should sponsor this show, because everything they make.
So good.
I did not know them before I started picking these things out, and now everything that I have touched that they've done is unbelievable, including this Rumble.
Yeah.
I think this is the one where you're like, I think this one's really good.
Right? Yeah, that's the one.
Right, that I was like, this is an exceptional thing.
Yeah.
It is not like perfectly my thing, but it is an exceptional thing, and it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt, you got to try this Rumble. It is...
But what we learned is that a distillery with a plan and a purpose and an intent couldn't make something as good as Jack throwing random things and pouring it.
If you only knew how well that fit into this episode.
That is beautiful, Matt.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Cheers. Matt.
Cheers.
And thank you, Jack. That's crazy. For the record, I had no idea this was going on in the background during the last 8 episodes.
That is wild.
That's amazing.
So that, I mean, it was like one of those things where I was sitting just chatting with Erica, and I was like, hey, I had this idea. I've got this other bottle that I've just been pouring everything leftover into. Do you think I should put that into blind tasting? Because I was leaning towards not doing it, and she just started laughing. She's like, you have to do that. There's no other option. You have to serve that as if it's a thing, because that's the testament to blind tasting, which is like, I don't even know what that is. Yeah. Like, I couldn't tell you what's in there.
And yet it is remarkably cohesive. Just an unbelievable, an unbelievably even experience, in my opinion.
I wonder if that just says that we all like bland things. Like, at the end of the day, we just like bland things. And when you put the bland things, so like we're just like, I don't need the outliers. I just want the straight down the middle. And we took all the straight down the middles and we put them together and it came out straight down the middle.
Yeah, but I feel like you liked it.
I really liked it, which only proves my theory that we can talk all we want about these complex things. But at the end of the day, we just want something that's really straight down the middle. I will say it was not, I would say number two was my favorite.
Yeah.
That was really what I thought was the most exceptional. Number one, I thought was one of the most challenging whiskeys that I've ever tried.
Yeah.
Agreed. Knowing that it's 120%.
Explains a little bit.
Yeah, it seems about right. But even watered down, it is really challenging.
Yeah.
And knowing that that is a whole bunch of different whiskeys at a whole bunch of different ages really makes a lot of sense. You know, the irony that we have all these infinity bottles on the table and this is the infinite barrel project. That's, you know, it's like we're making an Avengers movie suddenly.
Yeah, we've got
That was the theme. I think I forgot to ask Matt, but the theme he proposed was Infinity War.
That is about as Matt Cloud as it gets.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great. We've got 3 infinity bottles on the table. I love it. Excellent.
All right. Any final thoughts? Parting glasses, as Chris likes to say?
I like to call it parting glass. Last thing you want to leave our listeners with as we sign off here.
Ooh, Balcones is my favorite thing in Texas, and there is not a second place.
Good. Chris, you got anything?
I really like, it's really kind of, it's still kind of percolating in my brain, when we were talking about how, some of the best art is the art that, that you can make is the art that comes back to you with kind of interpretations you haven't, intended. And maybe, I guess I would leave you with this. If you're an artist or if you're creating something, create something a little bit dangerous that may come back to you with a surprising read. It's very satisfying.
Yeah, I guess mine is similar. Experiment. Go crazy. And it may be great. It may be terrible. But at least you'll know.
Mine feels remarkably shallow now. To be fair, I never knew how those went.
Yeah. Balcon is amazing. Though. No,
I'm,
okay.
That's, I'm willing to double down on it.
No, Balconis is great. I'm a big fan.
Well, experimenting is certainly what we've done with 9 episodes now. I have no idea how many of these will see the light of day, but as always, thanks for listening and drink slowly and get to know each other.